On Thursday, I had a skin biopsy, not a pretty common procedure. It's that time of life for me now. I'm afraid that all those years in the sun are starting to pay themselves back to me. And there's some concern. I got a little mark on my left arm, so it might be basal cell carcinoma, not super serious, but something that needs attending to. So the nurse and I were chatting away while she was getting things ready for the biopsy, and she asked me what I did for a living, and I told her that I was a pastor in a Christian church, and she said, "That's nice." I've heard that response before when I've given them the answer, right? And I feel like I'm being humored a bit in my vocation. I learned in our conversation, she was 59, that she had been an OR nurse and operation rooms nurse for many years, and before coming to the skin clinic. And the whole biopsy procedure didn't take too long. It hurt more than I was expecting, but it didn't take too long. And as I was getting ready to leave, we got chatting about the new year. It's just, you know, the beginning of January, and she was looking at her computer, and she said to me, "I sure hope 25 is better than 24. And I asked her if 2024 was a tough year for her, and she said yes. And I asked her what made 2024 so tough for her, and she said that she lost her husband on December 12th, only a few weeks ago. And that kind of information, when people tell you that in a matter-of-fact form, can take your breath away. At least it did mine. It was shocking to hear. It reminds me again that we have no idea what's going underneath the surface of people's lives that we meet. Someone's gruff with you for a moment. We have no idea what's caused it. I asked her what she was doing back to work so quickly with such a tragic loss, and she told me that she needed to bring some normalcy back to her life, so she decided to come back to work. And I'm thinking to myself, as she's telling me all this, is that what she's describing is one of those pivotal moments that come to us in life. What some people call a life passage event, one of those defining events in your life that changes your identity in some fundamental way. Think about the change that this nurse is going through. One day, she's married. A few days later, she's a widow. She enjoyed the faithful companionship of her husband. Now she's on her own. Her identity has been radically changed in a fundamental way in only a few days. This kind of change that comes to us can be gut-wrenching at times, which is what makes it so hard for her and for us too. And on top of that, she told me that she lost her mother in August of 2024. So now, in the same calendar year, in a matter of a few months, she went from being a married person with a mom now to being a widow and an orphan. So I do hope 2025 is easier for her than 2024. Years ago, as a teenager, I was rummaging through my mom and dad's stuff, and I came across a book called Passages. Anybody remember that book at all? It was written by the journalist Gail Sheehy, and she wrote a book focused on these life passage moments that come to us as adults, like the one that my biopsy nurse was going through. Some life passages are joyful, some life passages are exhilarating, some are difficult, some are heartbreaking. All life passages have within them an element of reinventing of ourselves. We have to allow ourselves to be reinvented by the circumstances we now find ourselves in. And I would distinguish that from the regular change that we go through in life. There's a lot of common day, everyday kinds of changes that we experience. They can be difficult, they can be challenging, they can be frustrating, but they don't change us in a fundamental way. A lot of life events don't require us to be reinvented. As they say, they may require a lot of work, they may be a pain to deal with, they may be difficult, but they don't shape our identity in a fundamental way. They don't change us in a kind of critical, basic way. But there are other events in life that are life-changing. They require us to be reinvented in some basic way. They are identity-changing experiences because they change how we feel about ourselves and how we experience life. Of course, different people react differently to the same thing. I remember one of my brothers holding his first child in his arms for the first time. It was a life passage moment for him. You could see it. You could feel it in him. It completely reorientated his life. It changed who he was. It changed how he understood himself. It reorganized his priorities in a pivotal way, and all in a matter of a few hours. Not every first-time parent has this experience. Not every first-time parent experiences the birth of their first child as a life passage event. Some do, but some don't. See, the critical issue here is whether what you're going through reinvents you in some form or another. Are you being reinvented by your experience? Are you being reinvented by your circumstances or a set of circumstances? See, it speaks to the matter of personal identity. Who am I? What am I? What is now the point of my life? I used to know, but now I don't. The death of a spouse or the death of a parent could be a life passage moment. The death of a sibling can often be a life passage moment. The death of a business that you've led for a long time could be a life passage moment. Being fired from a job or being hired to a new job can be a life passage moment. Being part of a horrific accident can bring you to that moment of profound realization, a major injury. They all could be life passage moments. Hey, getting your driver's license could be a life passage moment. Getting your first full-time job, getting married, getting divorced, having your last child move out, becoming empty nesters, that could be a life passage moment for some. They all have the potential of being life passages for us. My grandmother had a powerful life passage event happen to her when she had to give up driving. That was a traumatic experience for her because driving was an innate feature of her sense of identity. Driving represented freedom for her, the ability to come and go as she pleased. That was so important to her. Driving meant being independent, sovereign, self-governing. Driving was an extension of her own passion for freedom, her furious desire to be independent of others. And when she lost her license, it was a life passage moment for her because it spoke to matters of critical identity and purpose in her life. Losing her license required her to be reinvented. She had to learn how to experience herself in new ways, to welcome a new sense of self that did not include freedom and independence, those most prized possessions of her identity. And you know what? She couldn't do it. She couldn't do it. She never really did recover from her loss of driving. She never did learn how to live in a more dependent way on other people. And she died only a few years later, defeated by her loss of driving and everything that came out of it. You do understand that it wasn't the change in my grandmother's physical circumstances that did her in, that ultimately defeated her. See, her lack of mobility could have easily been remedied. She had a lot of money. She didn't lack for money. She could have hired taxis to take her around town. She could have taken all her driving budget that paid for her car and insurance and repairs. She could have put that into a fund that she used to get around town with taxis. But that wasn't really the point for her. See, because this is an issue not of practicality, but of identity. She was no longer able to go about as she pleased. She was now dependent on others, whether family or taxis. It didn't matter to her. The point was she was dependent. Her independence was highly curtailed, and she wouldn't allow herself to be reinvented in the light of the new reality she faced. See, the outer change, the outer reality is one thing, but that inner adaptation that's required of us, that's a totally different thing. That's why some changes are called life passage events. We come to events in life that require us to be reinvented in some form or another. How well we manage these moments in life, how we manage them, shapes so much of what we become. Sadly, it seems we often miss the opportunities that these life passages bring to us because we're not prepared to allow ourselves to be reinvented by our circumstances. And that means we can't move forward in life. We might be present in body in a certain kind of way, but our heart and mind are still back to what we used to be and where we used to be, even though we can't live there anymore. Jacob had one of those life passage moments by the ford of Jabbok. Do you know Jacob's story very well? He's one of those persons in the Bible whose basic story we should all know very well. I mean, we should know the story of Jesus, obviously, and we probably should know the story of Paul, too, and then there's Abraham and Joseph, but there's Jacob also. His story is important. It's a powerful story. Jacob was the grandson of Abraham and the son of Isaac. He had a twin brother, Esau. Esau was born first, Jacob was born second. That meant that the blessing of the firstborn belonged to Esau and not to Jacob. And in the ancient world, blessings and curses were taken much more seriously than they are today. To receive a blessing from someone, especially your father, was a huge gift. To receive someone's curse could lead to disaster. Esau, being born first, became the son who would inevitably receive his father's blessing, his father's special blessing. And perhaps for this reason, he became his father's favorite. This obviously irritated Jacob greatly. Jacob was his mother's favorite, but it didn't really matter in the set of circumstances around his father's special blessing. One time, as Esau and Jacob were growing up, Esau comes in from the field famished. He saw his brother there making a stew, and so he asked Jacob for a bowl of stew. And Jacob said to him, "I'll trade you a bowl of stew for your birthright." And Esau was hungry, so he agreed, amazingly. He traded his birthright, a special blessing from his father, for a bowl of stew. And then the years go by. Isaac is now an old man on the point of death. Esau has long forgotten his pledge to his brother, but Jacob hasn't forgotten. Esau made preparations for the special blessing that Isaac was to give to him, now that Isaac was near dying, near death. And this was a solemn moment. It was a special moment. So there's Esau making all the preparations for this life passage moment and the blessing that's going to come to him. One generation passing his blessing on to the next. And all the while Esau's making his preparation, Jacob finds out about it and he sneaks in to his father's room and deceives him. He masquerades as Esau in an elaborate ruse. And ultimately Jacob, deceived, blesses Jacob instead of Esau. It's the kind of blessing you can't take back. When Esau finds out, he's very angry about it. Ultimately, he holds this huge grudge against his brother for stealing his special blessing from his father. Jacob flees in the end from his brother's anger. And we get to see Jacob's conniving ways again and again in Scripture. Go back to Genesis 27, 28, 29. Keep going onwards in the story. It's quite a number of passages of chapters in the book of Genesis. In story after story, we discover that Jacob is a conniving louse, a dishonest, hugely manipulative scammer. And for many years, Jacob is on the run because of this, from one problem to another. And then the day comes to him when he becomes homesick, and he decides to go home with his family. And when he gets close to home, he reaches out to his brother Esau, and lets him know that he's back. He sends a peace offering to Esau. And then Jacob finds out that his brother Esau is now coming to meet him with 400 men. And it seems that Jacob's comeuppance has finally arrived. Jacob is deeply frightened by this news. And so by the ford of Jabbok, he sends his family and his household to the other side of the river, presumably for protection. And then on the near side, he waits by himself to receive Esau. It says that on the near side of the ford of Jabbok, during the night, all by himself, a man comes to wrestle with Jacob. Someone has come to contend with Jacob. There are many ways to understand this moment in the story of Jacob's life. I'm loath to turn this into some kind of psychoanalysis, to turn it into some kind of psychological metaphor only. God showed up to wrestle with Jacob. There was a literal wrestling. Did it involve two entities physically contending with each other, or was it something that happened at the level of the soul, the heart? No one knows for sure. The voice of truth, the divine voice, has finally broken through to Jacob into his reality. That voice has come to contend with Jacob, and Jacob has nowhere to run now. He's finally cornered and forced to contend with God. Do you know what it means to when God comes to contend with you? Do you know what that really means? When the true voice breaks through into the inner reality of your life, when you're finally forced by your circumstances to confront the truth about yourself or about what you've been up to in life. Do you know what this moment in life feels like? Because this is the one story we don't generally tell others. It's a private story. We might not even share it with our spouse or our closest friends. But I tell you, lots of people have these moments. I've had a couple of these moments when God has come to contend with me, come to wrestle with me and in the reality of my circumstances. And when this happens, a life passage moment occurs. Because it's almost inevitable that when you wrestle with God in some substantial way, however that comes about, you cannot come out of this unchanged. Jacob wrestles with the man the whole night, it says. It's as if Jacob is holding on for dear life. He won't let the stranger get away when the daybreak comes. The stranger tells him to let him go. Let me go, for it's daybreak, the stranger says to Jacob. And Jacob replies, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And there is Jacob on the hunt for more blessing in life. But this time he's not going to try to steal the blessing. He's not going to play some great ruse to get the blessing. He's meeting the challenge head on. He wants this life passage to come to him. He demands it. He pleads for it. Don't leave me as I am, please, Lord. Do not leave me as I am. And often life passages come to us when we lose something. You lose a spouse. You lose a job. You lose your health. Not all life passages are like that, but many are. All life passages lead to some form of loss. When we go through life passages, we have to say goodbye to what we used to be. Even in the joy of my brother holding his firstborn child, he knew his life had forever changed. How he used to live and how he used to be was no longer relevant going forward. That's not easy. My brother was a scratch golfer. He was an incredibly good golfer, but the day his son was born, he had to let that all go. He had to seek a new identity for himself that did not include being a scratch golfer. We seem to want to stay the same. We want our lives to remain essentially the same. Get me back, Lord, to what I used to be. Get me back, Lord, to the circumstances I used to have. We don't want things to change. Maybe that's why we flinch away from these life passages. When they do occur, we often resist them, like my grandmother did. No, I don't want to be reinvented today, Lord. No, I don't want my life reinvented today, Lord. But not Jacob. He wants to be reinvented. He also wants his life reinvented. For all his failings, when the moment comes to him, he knows what to do. He knows that he has to cling on to God. He won't let God go until he gets his blessing. And so God gives Jacob a blessing. See, Jacob strove with God. Jacob contended with God. He made it through to the other side. Jacob has stepped through a life passage moment without even fully realizing it. God recognizes the moment. The one who wrestled at the beginning is not the one who stands before God now at the end of the day, at the dawn of new light. And to commemorate this moment, God gives Jacob a new name. Israel, because Jacob now has a new identity. The one who contends, struggles, strives with God now stands before God, and therefore he deserves a new name. And in the Bible, it's not uncommon when people move through powerful life passages to be given a new name, especially when they've contended with God in some way. They've been reinvented by the experience of contending with God. They get a new name, like Abram to Abraham. Or Jacob to Israel, or Saul to Paul, or Simon to Peter. A new identity brings with it a new name. See, if God is taking you through a life passage today, or he's recently taken you through one in the recent past, or he's about to take you through one in the near future, are you ready for it? Are you ready for it? Do you trust it enough to allow it to unfold in your life? Do you know what to do when it happens to you? When you go through a life-changing experience that changes your identity in some fundamental way, do you know what to do in it? Let me remind you that you are going to wrestle with God. That's what we're called to do, to wrestle with God like Jacob did. However God comes to you today, you're going to wrestle with God, and you're not going to let him go until you get your blessing. No matter how difficult it is that you're facing. Whatever difficulty you face today, whatever it might be in the future, remember to contend and wrestle with God. That skincare nurse I was talking about, she was leading me back to the front of the clinic, and she told me as we went to the front of the clinic that she goes to church. Go figure that. Maybe she wasn't humoring me after all. She said that her pastor and her church had been such a huge blessing to her during her time of trial and her husband's death. She said to me that she knows that God will not give her something that she can't handle, even though I think she wonders about that for herself. I know she believes it, but she's still wondering about it. There's a contest going on right there. There's a struggle for her. The reinventing process is not an easy process to go through. Having one identity replaced in part with another, let's not pretend it's easy. It's hard. It's very hard. But there is life waiting for us on the other side. There's abundant life and a blue sky waiting for us on the other side of the life passage. God is in our life passages. God wrestles with us for our best self in our life passages, our God-created self. And as we move through these life passage moments, whatever happens, we're going to have a more powerful and richer way of walking with the Lord. That is what this whole enterprise we're in here today at Trillium is all about. It's what we're born into the world to do, to allow the whole reality of our walk with God to grow and intensify. And that's when, in those moments, we're given our best self and we learn how to walk with God.